Welcome back to Toys on Tap. This week is an incredible week. We are bringing on a newer artist, Canary Customs, jumping into resin toys and doing all kinds of stuff. Had his first show with Dub at DesignerCon 2025 and just coming out swinging with his own IP. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can like, follow, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. I say if you want more because that's how we get out to more people, which makes me able to do more stuff. And it's awesome and it's free. And thank you so much for all the support. If you want to support us even more, you can follow us on all socials at Toys on Tap. And if you want to support even more, patreon.com/toysontap. It's where extra goodies go when they're done. Now let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. What's up, man?
Hey, Abe, can you hear me?
Yeah, you're good.
Sick. What's going on, man? How are you?
Nothing much. This has been a long time coming.
Yeah, it's been a bit. Thank you for having me. Seriously.
Of course. I'm pumped to have you on because you're a newer artist. You're just stepping into this.
I'm dipping my foot. I've been doing it for a little bit, but this is the first time I'm really trying to make myself known, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Heck yeah.
I know. That sounds way more broad than it should.
Yeah. The term make myself known. Hey, we know you. Once you hit Dove's show, people start to know you. He has a good way of promoting people and getting people out there. And so I think that's where we met, right? You know what? We're going to get to that.
Okay.
That's crazy. I'm jumping ahead. I'm glad that you're on the show. We start every show, every episode the same way. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Sick. Yeah. My name is John Guarneri of Canary Customs. I'm a Long Island, New York based artist, specializing in bootleg action figure, resin cast, stereotypical card back format, but doing more experimental stuff as I go along, trying out additions and one-offs and things like that.
Dude, stepping into the resin game is not for the faint of heart.
No. It's a lot of trial and error for me. I know a lot of artists have pressure pots and things like that, but I'm going just analog mold making, rolling it around in the mold and hoping for the best, throwing out shit molds with bubbles and it's a lot of experimenting.
You should talk to DeMarc's Toys. He doesn't have he doesn't use a pressure pot either, and he's been doing toys for God forever. And just when he came on, it's been a couple of years now. I was still messing with resin, and he had said something like, what did he say? Oh, I told him like, hey, how do you do that and like get molds that look good and stuff? And he was like, I just know how air flows. Just such a cavalier answer.
It's a big thing, man. When you're casting a piece, a sculpted piece, or, you know, a kit bashed piece, you have to think about the airflow as it's being molded originally. I know a lot of people do injection molds also, and that eliminates a lot of fears of the bubbles. That's probably my next step. Mm-hmm. But for now, it's just like, oh yeah, experimenting with airflow and wasting a lot of mold maker for sure.
Dude, it is the absolute worst with all the, like, the beginning with like, smooth on either gets spilled on the ground. It's bad molds. It's just crazy how often. I mean, you're in New York, so that means you're near Suck Lord. You've got your Mattachine Society is out there as well. There's a couple other ones. And you have work that kind of looks inspired by like Suck Lord and how you do certain things, which always love to see people taking a page out of his book. I'm always in for it. But we're gonna start first. Tell me about the name. Tell me about the name Canary. What are we doing here?
So It's a bit of an homage to my dad. So he's still alive, very much still alive. An homage to a living man. But so he's the real reason, I think, like tracing it way back to the first time I could think about art. I could trace it all the way back to him. So he loved, and he still does this occasionally, but he loved painting little military miniatures, like Civil War and Revolutionary War and all that stuff. And there's a lot of overlap, obviously, with painting figures. But he was doing that, introducing me to toys and all this stuff at the same time. And my art brain was flowing. My neurons were connecting.
What up, toy nerds? This is Ray.
And Dave. Go check out our brand new YouTube channel, The Toy Rats.
We make toys.
We talk about toys.
We talk about old toys.
And new toys.
And toys that we make.
And we're just a bunch of goofballs. It's a good time.
We make fun of Dave a lot.
I'm all right with that. So, if you get a chance, go check out Toy Rats on YouTube. You won't be disappointed. You might be.
Yeah, you could. Who knows?
You got to check it out.
Toy Rats. Toy Rats. YouTube.
Bye.
Bye.
He would always tell me this story, unrelated to art, but when he was a kid in, I guess, elementary school in the 50s, the kids would make fun of his name because it was hard to say. So they would call him Canary, Johnny Canary. And I picture it like, you know, like 1950s school kids snapping their fingers, bullies. But that stuck with me. And I'm like, that's kind of badass. So the name is just what, I guess in a morbid way, what my dad was bullied with. but just I view it as almost a bootleg of my name.
Yeah.
And then my logo itself is actually a cockatiel bird. It's not a canary. So it's a layer in and of itself of just me being a shit ass, I guess. But
I mean, from what I can tell, you started making in like 2024, or at least when you started posting about it.
So I've been around longer than that, and I've been experimenting with figures for longer than that.
Cool.
Canary Customs, I would say, yes, that formed around 2024. And I was like, all of my crazy things that I'm doing, experimenting with figures and 3¾-inch scale and all that stuff, I want to condense it into a recognizable IP that usually works for a lot of artists rather than just going with their name. So I established that in 2024, but I started working with bootlegging figures and making custom 3¾-inch and whatever's right during the pandemic, right when everything shut down. And I mean, I know that was a really rough time for a lot of people being in lockdown. For me, it was a blessing because I was working, 8 to 7 every day and 45-minute drive each way. Like, I was beat. I was not experimenting with art. I mean, I went to art school and monetarily prolific field.
Yeah.
So you have to work, and I was losing my grip of art completely around that time. And then everything shut down and I was forced to be inside with all of my materials. And I was like, well, what the hell am I going to do now? Why don't I just experiment with some stuff? And started cooking up stuff then. A lot of one-offs. I really just started a little bit like avant-garde found object type of sculpture work around then. It was in 2024 where I started an edition, like my first edition of resin cast figures. Sorry, rambling.
No, that's what this show is all about. take me all the way back to John as a kid. What are the things that you're growing up with, the things that really change you as a kid, the toys you're playing with, the things that are impacting you now as an artist?
Shit, yeah. The biggest thing is Star Wars, for sure.
Yeah.
I remember the first exposure I had to Star Wars was Toy Story 2. My dad, and tying it back to my dad, he took me to see Toy Story 2. There was a Darth Vader, I am your father joke. I was like, well, I don't get it. And he's like, hold on. And then he just shot all, you know, however long, 30 years of history up until that point. I had lost the timeline, but all the Star Wars history up until that point, he shot it into my brain. I was all in on collecting figures. I was into Marvel and DC and like toy biz around that time too. But for me, it was all about 3 3/4 Star Wars figures, specifically around the prequels. That was what was available when I was very impressionable. But I treated them like like objects. I did not treat them like toys. And I think a lot of that has to do with how my dad treats military miniatures and not really play things. So I was looking at these Star Wars toys like, well, I'm going to set them up. I'm never going to touch them.
Yeah.
So my play time in my adolescence, like the development time, I was still thinking in an artistic way, in a sense where I was like, well, I can't get a scuff on it because the paint job is very important.
The paint jobs from the factory that don't care about me, they're super important. Your dad being super into military, there's this progression that happens with dads where it's like they hit 40 or 50 and they all of a sudden want to watch World War II documentaries. And it seems like your dad took that an extra step and was like, I also want to paint them.
Well, that's the thing. He was doing that. He was the first one to do that, that I know. No, I'm kidding. No, he was telling me he was painting military miniatures when he was a kid. That was what he was into. 50s, 60s, around that time was like, you could find some sets for dirt cheap that are now going for crazy prices. He knows all about it. He's an encyclopedia when it comes to that. So he hasn't changed at all.
I mean,
he's doubled down in adulthood. I will say that.
Yeah. Which, just so we're clear, when it comes to toys and the encyclopedic knowledge that we all end up having of like, this artist does this and this person does this. And it feels like when they've made jokes about autism and said like, oh, he must collect stamps or like trains.
Sure.
I don't, but I love soft vinyl. So maybe there's a hint of it somewhere. Tell me about these. I mean, I'm so interested about that. Did he ever invite you into doing this little painting of miniatures so that like it kind of tinged, so you had some art going on?
Big time. I was never too much into the military elements of it. I was interested in the painting stuff, and he introduced me to solvents and stuff before I was in art school. But yeah, it was more so I could never, and this is still the case. It was the case when I was a kid, the case now. So it didn't degrade. I could never get those exact details. My dad, and he was a paramedic as well, he has the steadiest hands. Mm-hmm. And so he was able to paint faces on, a guy that was 2 inches tall.
Yeah.
And he would take me to these conventions too, where people were exponentially better than, you know, professional miniature painters, where it would just look like a little person, like it was just a shrunk down human being. That's how talented these people are. That never interested me a ton. Mm-hmm. I appreciated the craft, but I was never really capable of that. I more liked the idea of the collecting of it and the setup and the display of it all. Even with my 3 3/4 figures that I'm making now and the series I did for Dov, like they're painted as well as I could, but they're very sloppy. I understand they're sloppy, but that's what I'm capable. And I'm trying to hone my skills. Don't get me wrong. I'm not just saying, oh, well, it is what it is. It's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
But I do like to lean, and this is in my, you know, my fine art, my oil painting as well. I lean into, well, this was made by hand. And I'm not a robot and I can't paint all the tiny little details in the face because it's just not what I'm capable of, but I'm getting the overall aesthetic of it. And that's what I got with my dad. He taught me the materials, he taught me the methods and the practices. And I said, that's great. I can't do that.
Yeah. I feel like that's, you,
man. That's the rules.
I feel like that's where we kind of start, especially with resin. There is there's two routes that you kind of go. Either it's like, I'm deliberately making this look like trash, or I'm putting in all the effort that I can, no matter how good or bad it is. I'm going to put in everything I can. And I think you're describing, like, I'm doing the faces as best I can. Like, that's just what it is. And sometimes there's like you, there's artists out there that we look at their work and it's like, what do we do? Like, that's insane. Insanely good. And then there's other artists that you're like, oh, you're deliberately, like when Sucklord puts on the back of like, I don't remember what the phrase, something like, you're dumb for buying this or something like that.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, there are really two ways that go with this. So you start making in 2020. What's your art degree in? What's the special? Is it like some kind of oil painting or something?
Yeah, I went to Tampa for University of Tampa for a fine art degree and focus in painting, drawing and painting. Excuse me, I stumbled through that. Degree of drawing and painting. I studied oil painting, like old master style, internal lighting type painting and drawing and graphite charcoal, all that stuff. Specified in portraiture mostly. That was what the curriculum was really leaning towards based off of the staff there. And it's still what I like to do, don't get me wrong. I started experimenting in 2020 during lockdown, and that's kind of where I was like, well, I could blend the two of these, because take, you know, the archetype for these bootleg action figures like Sucklord and so many, even myself, do. It's the vintage Kenner Star Wars card back. You have the card back and the blister and the figure in there. The card back in and of itself is a piece of art. Mm-hmm. Take the figure out of there. People just collect the card backs of any brand, Ninja Turtles, whatever. So I'm like, okay, well, that type of a card back can be experimented with. And I'm not the first artist to think about this at all. I'm not the first artist to do hand-painted card backs.
Yeah.
But I started experimenting with a few of those. Different scales, and you know, like always fell back to the 3 3/4 scale, but I'm trying to use all of my materials and, or should I say methodologies that I learned with fine art, and I still consider bootleg figures fine art, but in the 2D form, mix it with the 3D form, find out where that mixed media lies. So still figuring that out, but tried that in 2020.
Can I ask you a real pointed question with art?
Yeah, go for it.
My degree is not in art, but I do hold a degree in something that has pigeonholed me forever, right? So like, it feels like when you hold a degree in a specific art or like humanities or religion, or like it puts you in a small box almost, where either that's what you can do, or it's just hard to break out into other jobs then. Does that make sense? Like it doesn't, it doesn't necessarily transfer. And so when you're going through your art degree, which mine is in, my degrees are in religion, master's and bachelor's. So I'm like real pigeonholed.
Fascinating. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. when you're going in through art school, do you have a group of people surrounding you that are like, yes, this is what you should be doing, this is it? Or do you have a bunch of people saying like, what are you doing?
That is a very targeted.
Yeah.
Okay. So for me, I went for undergrad. Okay. And the way that I viewed undergrad and the way that my professors were kind of pitching it is, this is where you learn the tools.
Yo, let's take a pause real quick. Are you trying to launch a Kickstarter? Are you new to making toys? Are you trying to figure out how to do this Instagram thing and marketing and business side and all that? Send us a DM. Our goal has always been that we want to care for the community, and we want to be there for everything that is going on with the community and people that need help, because we were once helped. So we want to pass that on. If you are looking for that kind of stuff, let us know. We will answer questions. We also are starting this new thing where we can help you through the entire process, because it is sometimes overwhelming when you're just stepping in and you're trying to get information from everywhere and piece it together. And it's always nice to have it all in one spot. So if this is you, shoot us a DM. We'd love to talk to you.
Materials, the methods, You could go down a bunch of different routes. We're going to teach you printmaking. We're going to teach you sculpture. Like, we're going to throw kind of everything at you as different electives. I worked in a wood shop, like all these things. The way that I was viewing it is it's the life after the undergrad that you discover where you point those skills.
It's still
very pigeonholed. Don't get me wrong, because I didn't focus on digital art.
Right.
There's a whole discussion with AI, but digital art is a way more, arguably, way more prolific profession for jobs. You could get jobs easier. You could work from home. A lot of these things that fine arts is like, there's not a lot of options necessarily. Now I work at a gallery and my fine arts skills are coming into play and my different materials methods are all being applied in a gallery setting. And that's great. But, you know, I'm not professionally making. Not very many artists are, right?
Right.
So.
Yeah, and I'm sorry if that question was so retarded. I only ask because that's like, I feel that on the other side in a different major where it's like, I did that. And it almost is like, man, if you don't do a specific job, this degree is really hard.
I was already mentally going into my degree saying, well, this is not a life that I'm choosing that's very profitable. And that was what was making me happy. And I mean, that's how I pigeonholed myself into working, you know, 11-hour days and all that stuff. But there's a balance that I am still attempting to find that so many artists find down the line, right? Where they're not, you know, paying their bills strictly with art. They're working another job or whatever, but they're still able to find time to do that. That's in my goal, in my mind, the goal for how I want to do. I don't want to, you know, massive house or anything like that. I want to be able to find time to create and still pay my bills. That's not a profound statement, but in the sense of I went into my degree knowing that, and that did cushion a lot of the realizations that came with graduation.
I value people that go into their degree or into their jobs saying, I know that I'm not doing this for money. I'm doing this for my own happiness. Holy, like, you understand life differently than a lot of us. Like, my brain, it just isn't wired that way to the point where I'll like tuck away my happiness if it means like stability, and that sucks. Like, it's a hard place.
But I have to also acknowledge that there are people that aren't even able to be in as luxurious a position that I'm in. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not wealthy. I'm still kind of, you know, working month to month with my bills, but I'm comfortable enough to have made that call to go to art school. So many people couldn't. And I meet so many incredible talented artists, or I either meet them online or in person, that never went to art school, that just do the thing. And there's absolutely, you know, a reasoning behind doing that, mostly monetarily. But there are things you learn outside of school. You cannot learn everything just in that. But I also, you know, I have to acknowledge the level of luck and privilege that I am stated just out of the get-go that I'm able to do this at all. Everything is really rough for people at this point in time, and I'm casting resin figures in a closet, and I have to thank my stars and garters for that.
That's crazy. So we get to 2020, just like everyone else, world gets shut down and it's chaos. I've told people this before, that if we could go back and I had the knowledge I have now, I would do more with the 3 months off.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that that's the, like, I would probably focus hardcore in art more than, but that's just where Toys on Tap started. And so you get to this point where how do you realize you want to make resin action figures?
Didn't start with resin. I was pretty adverse to resin at first. I wanted to stick with just kit bashing.
Yeah.
And most of my figures were that. One, I was super duper broke in 2020.
Yeah.
I couldn't even afford the resin, which, again, this is not a cheap hobby of mine. This is not a cheap thrill seek that I follow. But I was like, okay, I'm going to kit bash. I'm going to see what I could do. I have a bunch of paint still. I'm going to fuck around and experiment with this.
Yeah.
It led to resin by, you know, me making a really good figure. I made a one-off figure, which is the figure that is in DKE. It was in Designer Con Fools. I made this figure and I'm like, oh shit, like I'm really happy with this. I should learn how to cast. I should try to do a series. So I jumped off from there, you know, in 2024. I'm like, all right, time to experiment, mold making, all this stuff. But yeah, mostly just kit bashing at the beginning, yeah. I think.
Mm-hmm. Which is such a fun way to start. And there's, I mean, because there's endless things you can do with all the action figures, the beaters, all that stuff that exists. There is so much that goes into just having fun before it turns into like, I now I'm doing this as a job, or before it turns into like, I now I'm selling these. So you start the kit bashing, and then I'm assuming like a lot of us, you start reaching out and looking around at like, who else is doing this?
Sure. Yeah.
What'd you find? Right.
I mean, I knew about the art toys scene before I started making art toys. I got my first Suck Lord in 2019. I think I have two right now. Again, money's tight, but I got my first Suck Lord in 2019, and you know, holding it in my hand, I'm like, oh yeah, this is a very valid art form that I wasn't really exposed to in undergrad and post that. So he was definitely, as you pointed out, he was definitely a huge inspiration. Alex Gross, I was watching his work for a while. Speaking of a painter that makes figures. Now I'm blanking. I mean, I know you're working. It wasn't the immediate. I know you're working with Recollection Toys.
Oh, yeah.
The work that he does is next level. He's always an inspiration for me every time I come across one of his pieces.
It's insanity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I have. You said that they came in. I mean, I have like five left that'll be sold, but like, they're insane. It's a whole setup, dude. Like
the professional production that you guys have on this is just next level.
It like,
holy shit.
And then it like, it just sits there. Like it's an Oscar, dude.
And this is great for an audio media, by the
no,
way.
No, yeah. I don't even care. People that, are like, oh, what are you doing? I'm showing the Kaiju Claw that is just so rad. People like him. So in action figures, there's a really tough thing where it's like, I've talked about this before. There's not alarmingly big jumps that happen anymore, right? So
sure.
At home, like the realization that you could paint an already made action figure so that you jump. The realization that you can kit bash and switch body parts. You're like, oh, something new. Mm-hmm. The realization that you can copy those and like make new things. And then you have like magnetic articulation and then different kinds of articulation like Glios and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so but it doesn't make alarmingly big jumps.
Right.
Recollection Toys decided I'm going to take a whole new medium, still make them usable action figures, but fragile.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this.
Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have an engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
DKE.
And it's like it takes these indie art toys and puts them into fine art, which is, I don't know. I didn't think we were ready for that.
I think a big part, and I think he's a professor, isn't he? He's a sculpture professor, ceramic.
He came on at one time. I don't remember.
I think he teaches, but I know he's pretty well versed in obviously ceramics.
Yeah.
It's that level of knowledge though, where I don't know this, but I could guarantee when he first started down the ceramic path, he was not thinking about 3¾-inch scale action figures. And that's how you have to innovate, is by having all these different people come in with these different knowledge and say, well, what's missing? What is the missing spot? And his level of intricacy and detail at casting porcelain, Darth Vader's, whatever like that. It's so simple, but it's so simple for him. So
right. I think to what the jump that like that becomes fine art almost for me is his pieces in general when they're hanging on the wall. Like that's one thing. The piece that he made with the crinkled blister and the backer and stuff, like
that's a revolutionary move.
It has a lot in common with the guy that sculpts pillows out of stone. Have you seen? So it has a lot in that you're using something to show something else in a medium that's different, and it's still beautiful, still art. And it changed how I look at figures. I mean, I don't produce anything like that, but it changed how I view action figures. So you, as you start kit bashing and stuff, when do you make the jump to resin? Mm-hmm. Because we don't stay in kit bashing. And if you did, you only did it for a little bit. Scrolling back on your feed, it was like kit bashing didn't last forever. And then you just saw that where your ideas started just piling in.
Every once in a while, I mostly stick with kit bashing when I'm producing a one-of-one figure.
Right.
As you know, a series takes a lot of planning. An edition takes a lot of planning, not just in the logistics setting, but also in the creative setting.
Yeah.
You want to make it something that's worth a series, that numerous people are going to want to have a piece of that pie. But I do love the one-off. I have a idea. It's a bad idea. Fuck it. I'm just going to make one.
Right.
The one I have here, I could show you an example.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll describe it for that run.
So I studied in school, you know, the Dadaist movement and just Duchamp, for example, who did the ready-made, right? Mm-hmm. He just took something, repurposed it. It's a urinal, except it's on its side, and now it's art. How about that? that's the mentality I try to have on these one-offs.
Yeah.
This one-off was an actual vintage Brillo box. I cut it down. I took a figure, kitbashed it, flocked it in Brillo, and just stuck it on there. And I was like, fuck it, one of one. There's no way I could produce an edition of these.
Yeah.
But I still like to do kit bashing for these one of ones because they're never going to come out of this, you know, blister. This is it. And the kit bashing, especially, I love the sense of theft that bootlegging gives.
Yeah.
And kit bashing isn't even trying in that sense. And I'm not poo-pooing it, but I'm saying like taking this thing, sticking it together, maybe with some glue, maybe with a joint or something like that. And boom, you're done. That just screams to the level of art that I want to be making, you know, especially in current world, all these companies that are raising their prices on figures. I love Star Wars figures. I had to sell almost all my Star Wars figures, and I love the new ones they're making, but I can't afford a $20 3¾-inch mass produced figure anymore. So I love just the idea of, well, how could I get as down and gross and gritty with this as I possibly can?
Yeah. You know? I mean, it is, the piece that you made is super well done. And that's like doing the flocking with the Brillo pad stuff is really smart because it's clear resin. So it just looks like it's made out of that.
It's out material. Of Brillo. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, which is cool. it is tough. There's that thing like there's no new idea, right? I don't remember how it actually goes. Like everything, we say it in different ways. Everything's been done under the sun, stuff like that. And what it boils down to is like our thoughts have been done before or something like that. Sure. And I think what happens when we make art toys or we make kitbash things, is that it feels like it pushes that limit on that of like, I don't know that someone thought about a Brillo action figure. Mm-hmm. I think they thought about kit bashing, but I don't think that someone thought about that. And so you get to like these little moments of pushing it. Mm. And I like that you're honest about the theft thing, dude. Like we can't hide behind making these types of action figures is a form of theft. I don't do what you're going to do. No one's going to turn you in. Like, but we can't hide behind that. And I think that that's funny when people say like, no, 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 it's not, it's my own. Right, but I can definitely
I could see that argument be made for artists. I'm not going to name anyone in particular because I can't even think, but I could see that argument being made for some artists, how a piece does evolve into a state of it's not even recognizable from what it was originally taken from.
Right.
That's not where I want to live. I want to live in the sense where people see my piece and just be like, this is not right.
Right, right.
And this is wrong. Why is this making me feel weird? This is taken from something and it isn't right. Yeah, that's right. That's what I'm going for.
I mean, we have things like Phantom Starkiller, which if you scroll back far enough or talk to Peter, you can see where he was like in the beginning, early stages, pulling from different action figures and doing whatever. Mm. You'd never know that now. Like if someone picked up the Phantom Starkiller action figure from Super 7, it's really hard to say like that kind of looks like this because it doesn't.
Anymore. I see an inspiration, but it's its own thing.
Right. It's morphed into something new, which is awesome. So you start doing that and then you dabble and then somehow you get connected with Dove, the kingpin of resin action figures. And how do you get connected with Dove?
Because of you, because of your podcast, man. He was on. I've been listening to it for a few years because, as I, you know, as it's been established, I'm new to this and I want as much information as possible. But he was on a couple of episodes, and one of the last ones he was on, he made a kind of open call. I don't know if that open call still stands. It was a couple years ago now. But I followed up with him and I was very humble, and I was like, I'm not there yet, but like, give me some time. I would love to come back to you. And he said, like, open invite, come by, reach out. And so I did, and he was so welcoming, incredibly welcoming, in a community where I am not active, really. I mean, you always talk about conventions and going to conventions. I mean, I'm in New York. There are a ton of local ones, but I have yet to dip my toe into, you know, having a booth and stuff like that. That's a lot of monetary commitment. That's a lot of time commitment, all that stuff. So I'm not there yet. So the fact that he was willing to see something in the pieces I made and the way I carried myself and I guess my other work, if he would look at that, I don't know. But it's just as simple as that. He was just so welcoming and gracious, and my first foot in the door.
Dude, he's a good guy. I mean, I don't know that he would admit it, but like, it's because of him that there's so many resin artists that exist or artists.
Sure.
I think too, it's important to keep, like, when I say like conventions and when I talk about it in toys, because of the nature of Toys on Tap, I don't, like I can kind of step into each one of the conventions and just be there because I've interviewed people in all the different toy scenes. Mm. And so it's not like I only go to this type of convention or this type of show or whatever. But I think you were in this early stage where there's no such thing as a resin toy show. There's now just toy shows that include resin
that artists, include resin, yeah, of course,
which is awesome, right? You have you're not that far from Assembly Required in Asheville. I mean, you're far, but not as far as some of us, but
not, and that's as far, like, as Designer Con, for example.
Right And that's cool because it's a bunch of resin artists that get together with their Soft Vinyl and Sofubi and all kinds of stuff there. And then you have things like in your space, Kaiju Brooklyn exists in New York and Five Points Fest and all kinds of stuff. And
yeah, you just had, I was just listening to people from Five Points Fest talk about, I think they're having, I don't know when their next show is. That was one that I was thinking I was going to attend for sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like
an empire of blister.
Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters.
3.75 inch or 1.18 inch.
19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options.
Quantities of 100
sample packs available.
Empire Blisters.
Now functional. Toys on tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout.
Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's COYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters.
If you're near these shows, regardless if you are there or not to table, go to these shows.
Yeah.
That, like, if I could tell anything to a new toy artist or anything, go to the shows. Like, go, even if you don't sell a thing and you're just there to view, we glean from the people around us and this community pours back into people. Mm-hmm. And that can only happen when you go and you meet and you engage. And, but yeah, so you meet Dove. And you do a run of figures for 2025 Designer Con, if I remember correctly, because you're on the show.
Yes, sir.
Are you the one that made the book too?
No, that was another. Okay. Was another artist.
I'm forgetting. I couldn't remember who made the book, and I was hoping it wasn't you because I didn't read it. I wasn't going to pretend that I read it.
Okay. I heard him speak on the DKE live stream.
Yeah.
He was a little bit later in the stream.
Okay.
But he is next level as far as conceptual. The way that I looked at my conceptual piece, and I'll get into if you want that specific piece. But I was like, well, this is my idea for this and beginning, middle, end, and there you go. He took everyone on a fucking journey. Mm-hmm. That book explores time and relativity and all these things.
You read it?
No. I listened to him talk about it.
Yeah.
I respect the hell out of him for forming that into words and also physical a figure. That was a really cool piece in the show for sure.
It is bonkers. So tell me about your piece. So you because this takes you into another realm as well, where you are now doing runs. Dove has since settled on how big the runs have to be, thank the Lord.
From my recollection, it's at 15 to 20 now.
Yeah.
That's what I did. I did an edition of 20. Yeah. And he was very welcome to that.
And it's an original idea, not like a playoff of anything. I mean, there's at some point you're going to have to do a Boba Fett something. It's a part of what we do.
I am there right now.
Okay, good. It's just
not
a part
Boba
of what
Fett,
we
but
do.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter the take, right? Like, I've never done a Boba Fett action figure, but I did a professional guy named Bob A. Fett, and I made him like an HR accountant or something like that. So I think you're at some point that's going to need to happen, but. Tell me about the figure. You come up with an idea and then pitch it to Dove. And the hard part is when he says yes, then it's like, oh, now I got to do it.
So I'm going to be transparent. Okay. So he did express to me, and he expressed this on the podcast as well, original ideas are tougher sells.
Absolutely.
They are. And you've explored this with a ton of artists that if it's really just unrecognizable IP, the structure is there of a recognizable thing, whether it be a small kaiju or a 3¾-inch figure.
Yeah.
But if the idea is completely alien, people don't gravitate towards it.
Correct.
It makes sense. We go towards what we know. Eventually, if you do it for long enough, then it is something that people know. It's in the oeuvre, and then they're like, okay, now it's recognizable. How do you get to that point? It's a very slow start.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't expect a huge sales amount for this first run, but I was like, all right, I'm just going to go ahead and do it. Dove gave me the go ahead, like, it's, you know, just know this going in and out. And otherwise you're good. And, you know, he's putting his business on the line as well. The fact that he was willing to give that same courtesy to me. It's very, very gracious of him. But so the idea, the idea for this figure is not a time and space relative. A couple of the years ago, me and my buddy Chetlet were exploring some ideas about how to deconstruct the face. It was more closer to our thesis. And I was doing a lot of hero worship in that time, overlap with my art. So the easiest way to deconstruct a face, a mask, is two eye holes, one nose, and a mouth. And that's about it. So I cut out a piece of paper, cut out these features, taped it on my friend's face, lit him up a cigarette, and took some photos of him for a painting that I had did of the time. And I loved the aesthetic of just a flat face with these features. It's haunting, but it's also neutral enough. You can't tell if it's good, bad, like you don't really know which way this being is leaning.
Yeah.
And so that evolved into the figure. I loved the design so much. I wanted to make a figure, and I'm just going to be completely transparent about where the figure comes from.
Sure.
It's a
stolen. Wait, let me guess.
Wait,
there's no way I'm going to guess, because you did paint over and did a lot of stuff.
I did sculpting work and some kit bashing as well.
But is it a vintage figure?
Vintage for now.
Okay. There's no way. I thought I'd be able to, like, it's not a Super 7 one because it has different proportions on it.
No. This is actually larger than 3 3/4 scale. Okay. But this is the, now I'm forgetting his name, the kid from the first Jurassic Park movie.
Oh,
his sculpt is so fascinating because compared to the other figures that are larger than 3 3/4 scale, it makes sense. But I'm like, this is a terrible sculpt for a child. This looks like a grown man.
Yeah.
Sculpted a fanny pack, cut off the head, added a custom sculpted head with this faceplate. And Bob's your uncle. There you go. No qualms about my theft there.
And hold it up one more time.
Yeah.
Is this the finished one?
This is a reject. I gave all the finished ones to Dov.
Okay. But these are the colors and stuff, right?
Yes, this is the color scheme.
Just
black and white
and gray. Like, and you gray are so smart.
The only touch is there's a cigarette in the finished version that has a little red tip.
Okay. You are so smart in doing the paint colors the way that you did and chose them. There is nothing worse than getting Dov an idea. And you're like, I want to do. And Dov has been, I mean, I've known him now for 4 or 5 years, something like that. And I remember when I did the Furbzerker and he was like, listen, this is going to suck, man. Like, you got to like narrow this down. And
what, it was just like vomit, color vomit. Like,
well,
color,
yeah, palette, there's just so much going on. And my dumb brain was like, yeah, I'll try it. Whatever. Like, I just went with it. And, it did suck, but you narrowed it down where there's like three colors. This is how quickly we can wrap this up and just
go. As much as Dov knows, you got to try it for yourself because now you know. And
well, now I know that I'm done. It. Yeah, I'm done doing resin action figures ever. Like, I'm not going back. Yeah. That's crazy.
Never say never. Oh, man, it's so fun to experiment in this. I, at the moment, will never do Sifubi. I don't think I will ever because I don't have a connection to it. I never really had those growing up, the blow molds or whatever you always talk about with these artists. That would be completely disingenuous of me to kind of go down that path because I have no connection to it. But you have a connection to 3 3/4. I believe that you would have a moment. Maybe you do a kit bash one off. Never say never, you know?
The things that have killed it are when people have reached out, and I used to do figures for people. Okay. They would reach out and they would say, hey, can you make me? Sure. Like, let's talk. And then one guy who was a real estate guy said, can you make me? I need 150 of them. And it needs to look like this. And so I like kit bash this thing up. There are things that you learn in resin casting that I learned on the spot that I wish I would have known before I started. So like when it's really cold outside, it's really hard to like, you got to wait forever to get things cured when it's really like, and so the building I was casting in didn't have heat and it was in winter. And though I'm in Southern California, it hits 50 degrees sometimes, or
that fucks the whole chemistry up.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so we, it just took forever and the paint job was too much. And I just, by the like 140th one, I was like, I'm going to kill someone.
Oh, man. That's like when your parents catch you smoking a cigarette and they make you smoke an entire pack. Like that was the way that you went out. I feel so bad.
That, and that, I mean, I went out with the Fur Berserker. That was my last one that I made for Dove. But even that one, I was like, what the hell am I doing here? What's the, and I could not functionally make my brain.
Okay. Maybe you just need a break. And maybe you're going to need a break at some point from the Sifubi, you know, that mentality, you know, and that's the beauty is we're all one in the same.
We're just different. We're moving to plush next.
Oh, God. Good luck.
No, factory oriented is where I'm at this point. Like it's just to orchestrate from the top down instead of from the bottom on the bottom. Like I can't. I don't want to be in the middle of trying to make a stuffed animal. I want to pay a factory to make me a stuffed animal.
Okay. Yeah. Valid. Yeah. You want the idea, you want the concept, the proof of concept. And then,
if people like it, it's like, great, manufacture. Totally. I can still get to the point. Like I can still prototype. I still have all the stuff. Mm-hmm. That's how I have done a lot of my work. But yeah, producing large scale for me is done.
I was a fabricator for a little bit. I was doing an internship in Brooklyn and is a very small scale artist, but I was fabricating the larger idea, right? Mm-hmm. It's a thing for interns that are in school, especially. I was helping her vision come to life. And that's what people need because there are ideas and concepts and whatever you want to accomplish, you're just not going to be able to make a mold of and crank out 20 of them. They're bigger than that. So, you know, go down that rabbit hole, man. Go down that plushie rabbit hole.
Why not? Heck yeah. And there's people, I mean, I kind of want to figure out how it's been for you, but like in this community, the longer you're in, the more social capital you gain. So then you can ask people questions of how do I do this? We've talked on this podcast before about gatekeeping and the reality that it exists. I can't say that it doesn't exist.
Sure.
But from this side of it, I think a lot of times it exists to help protect other people. Like we don't want someone to invest $1,300 in the wrong thing or like just start throwing money and it all goes away. Mm. And so instead of calling it gatekeeping, what I've run into is like, I don't know, you call it nurturing or something. I don't know. Who knows? But so when you first start this and you're working with Dove and those types of things, what's it like interacting with the community, trying to figure out like, how do I do a larger run? How do I figure out card backs, blister, all that stuff?
For me, it's at this point in time, it's just been a lot of self-research, a lot of listening to your podcast, but then a lot of finding artists through social media, going down their rabbit holes, seeing if they have production videos of how they make a piece, seeing if they post a video of how they fuck up, even better. Mm-hmm. Like that is unreal knowledge to have. I will get more in the weeds, I think, with the community, as you said, attending shows and all that stuff. But for now, it's just a lot of research, trial and error. And, I got to be honest, a lot of it's still figuring out what I want to do. Mm-hmm. I could ask Dov all the questions in the world, but if I don't even know what direction I want to go down, how is he going to help me?
Right.
I'm figuring that out right now as well. I got a new job recently within the last year. I have a completely new schedule and I hope that this schedule, the reason I got this job, I went down this career path is because I want time to have that balance again, to focus more on art, to explore more of this. So I can answer some questions for myself that I can then pose to larger powers that be, or my peers, you know, figure that out. I don't want to waste anybody's time. Everyone is always, you know, trying to figure their own shit out. Mm-hmm. And last thing I want to do is drag an artist or a distributor or whatever down. And I don't feel like I'm, you know, missing out right now. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm still exploring and figuring out where I want to go.
Dude, that's the best place to be and to be creating and then still figuring out like what you want to do next. So that's the question. You have now been a part of your first show. Mm-hmm. What's next for Canary?
I am currently producing two editions. I'm still making some one-offs and all that stuff, mm-hmm. but my focus is going towards the editions now. I'm designing card backs. I'm hand painting a card back that I'm going to end up scanning and then reproducing in that way. And then I'm figuring out what to do with them, 40 odd figures, yeah. And then figuring out what to do for the next one. My thing, I work at a gallery that is a fairly established gallery of narrative surrealism work and all that stuff. And something that the owner has taught me, the reason why I wanted to work there is because I wanted to learn how a gallery operates. The thing that the gallerist told me is think about what you do with your art after, or that's kind of what a gallery is for, to help you figure that out. Like as a creator, focus on what you were just making. Just think about that. And then when you have stuff made, besides the element of storage, the element of where you're going to keep it, the thing is done and it can go on in more capable hands. For example, a gallery, a Dove, a distributor, stuff like that. You could reach out to more people, show them what you have. So for now, I'm just in create mode, just chug, chug, chug. And when I have these things done, I'm going to look at them and say, okay, what now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's always the question. That feels like the early question because you just keep going, you get excited about it. And it's like, I need to keep moving. And right. So the question always is what now?
Where am I moving to? That's a valid question, you know?
Yeah. It's such a good question of like, okay, what's next? What am I, and I don't know. That's always so hard when I ask that a lot of myself. Like, we just did this something with this artist. What now? Like, I have something going. What now? And it makes it so that you don't get to stay in the excitement of the actual whatever. But I don't
like
know.
I've heard you say, like, revel in what you've created as well. Like, take a second. Look at what you did and pat yourself on the back because you made something.
Yeah. Now don't spend 2 weeks congratulating yourself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're artists after all. We got to
take a day and just really say like, I did it. That would be super cool. The last part of the show for everyone is plugging away places where they can find you. If they want to collab with you, if you're going to be at shows, if you're aiming to be somewhere, all those things. So John, please, please, please plug all your stuff.
Thank you. So I'm just going to pitch Canary Customs on Instagram. There are links to my website. There are links to Dov's website where you could find my figures. That's the place where I am collectively sharing what I do next, what pieces in progress, pictures I'm working on, all that stuff. For now, that's it. And I don't know. Thank you for having me on. This has been killer, man. It's like, this has been a mecca for a lot of information for me. And now I'm yapping on here about nothing.
Dude, thank you so much for coming on.